the preservation efforts, if we can call it that, keeping the nation alive. And the famine eventually affects Canaan, where Jacob is living with his sons. He sends his sons to buy grain in Egypt. And they unknowingly bow down to Joseph, which fulfilled those dreams, as we mentioned. And they present themselves to Joseph. It's been 20 years. Joseph could have acted in a very vindictive way, as a lot of people in the world would do, get his revenge for how he'd been mistreated. But Joseph showed great character. It had been at least 20 years since they had seen one another. But he did not react that way. So we looked at Matthew 5, what the Lord taught us about that. We looked at Romans 12, what Paul teaches about not repaying evil for evil, but with good. And Joseph certainly gives us a great example to follow in those passages. And this is where we are starting at this morning now. To at least the last part of verse 9 through verse 17, Joseph speaks harshly to them, and this was not Joseph being vengeful. The way I've phrased this in some of the questions, this is somewhat of an act or a charade. I think Joseph was doing all these things to test the character of his brothers, to see what they're made of. The last time they dealt with a brother, which of course was him, how did they treat him? Well, it wasn't good. And as we get further into these dealings here, these interactions, again, what brother is not with them? And how is Joseph and Benjamin related? Of course, they're all brothers, but they're full-fledged, full-blood brothers of the same mother. Rachel, of course, dying at childbirth when she bore Benjamin. So he's wanting to see Benjamin, and I think all these events that how he's treating his brothers is geared at to see what they're going to do regarding Benjamin. Especially later in this story, the very words of Judah indicate now that as cherished as Joseph was to Isaac or to Jacob, Benjamin is now endeared to him, and Joseph wants to see how they'll throw him under the bus, so to speak, like they did Joseph. So I think he's doing this to ascertain their disposition. He accuses them of being spies. Of course, they've come to buy food, but he says, "No, you're here to spy out the undefended parts of our land," which was not true. And they admit to having lost a brother. One is not with us and one is no more, they said. We're just here to buy food. And Joseph keeps the act going. He says, "No, but you are spies. You've come." So what does he do? He throws them in prison for 3 days. He jails them. We see that there in verse 17. Now, in verse 18, Joseph says, "Now here's the plan. Here's what you're supposed to do." What's the instructions? What's his conditions? Verses 18 through 20. Basically, what's his terms? You go back home, and you bring your youngest brother. What if they didn't do that? That's right. No deal. Okay, I'm in charge of the distribution of the food. And everybody's wanting grain. Everybody's wanting food. Nobody has any food. You're going to get it from me. You've got to go back home. You've got to bring your youngest brother back. And I'll keep one of you. And if you don't, then he becomes my slave. Well, when they heard that, what had their father already told them when they came to Egypt the first time about Benjamin? That he already said he's not going. I will not let him go. I've already lost one son. I'm just paraphrasing, but if I send Benjamin, I might lose him too, and I can't bear that. I just cannot endure that. So Joseph is putting upon them the very condition that their father is not ever going to agree to. They now begin to express some remorse, don't they? Some regret. This is just them talking amongst themselves. And look how they say, and especially in light of verse 23. They're saying in verse 21, "Truly we are guilty concerning our brother." Now, which brother is that? Well, that'd be Joseph. "We're guilty concerning him because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us. Yet we would not listen, therefore this distress has come upon us." Reuben being the oldest, what's he do? "I told you. I told you guys back there we shouldn't do this, and you didn't listen to me." Remember, Reuben was not a part of the plan to throw him into the hole and to kill him. he had plans to do what when all that happened back there? To come back later and rescue him. But while he was apparently gone, the brothers sold him off to the Midianite traders. Reuben was not there, apparently. So now things have come full circle, and they express some regrets. And I think there's a lesson here in human behavior. People are going to act the way they want to, all right? And especially those that that do some things that are not honorable, they're not right. It's not good to act that way. And later, when it comes back to bite them, so to speak, what kind of things do they think or say? What these boys are saying. You know, we shouldn't have done that back there. It was wrong, and now we're getting the payback. Now we're getting our penalty. And there's always somebody around to say what Reuben said. I told you so. You shouldn't do that. But verse 23 is the ironic part of this. What didn't they know? Joseph understood them perfectly. They thought he was this Egyptian. Possibly they're speaking in Arabic or their native tongue, and they wouldn't think Joseph would know. But he understood exactly what they're saying. How do you think that made Joseph feel when they were saying this? Where was this empathy back there when it all happened? Not now. Yes, Rusty. Well, it's been several years. You are correct. And now they're feeling what they should have felt back there. Joseph, again, this when it happened back in chapter 37, there's no record that Joseph was crying and pleading for his life. Well, you know he did. An average person would do that. But this verse tells us that he did do that very thing when they threw him into that hole and abusing him and mistreating him. And so they utter these regrets now, and Reuben is right there as the older brother. Yes, I told you, that's what it has to be. Now Joseph deals with them kindly. This gives us the indication that Joseph speaking to them harshly, Joseph throwing them into prison for 3 days, that was not his real demeanor. That was just a test. I'm calling it a test. Because the way this section concludes, at least through verse 28, how does Joseph treat them? How is it kind what he does? Or what does he do? Oh, he shows them mercy, but what does he do about the grain? He gives them the grain, doesn't he? But he doesn't charge them. He puts their money back in the sack. And so they go back home, and as a traveling party, you've got to stop to water the animals somewhere or stop for a rest, and so they start digging in their bags, and what do they find? What's this doing in here? Now, they know they didn't put it in there. They know that. But what do they think the Egyptians will think? Well, they stole it. Oh, we've had it now. This is not good. This is really working out bad. In fact, look at their statements in verse 28. They start singing, and each one says, "My money has been returned. Behold, it's even in my sack." Their hearts sank. They turned trembling to one another. And what do they say? What is God doing to us? Well, that's an odd thing to say. Kind of blaming God for all this. Why, God is punishing us now, certainly, for all that we've done in this whole episode. So Joseph deals with them kindly, and they assume the worst. This will not go well for us in Egypt. Of course, they don't go back and give the money back. They keep going on home. They've got the grain. And so they just have to worry about it later, I guess. But they do assume the worst, and they even... seemingly, it seems that they blame God for this. What is this that God has done to us? Okay, this takes us now to verse 29 and the last part of question 14. Now they have to relate all this to their father, and we'll see this through verse 34. They're telling him the story. We said to him, "We are honest men. We are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father, one is no more. The youngest is with our father today in the land of Canaan. And the man," of course they're referring to Joseph, "the Lord of the land said to us, 'By this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me and take grain for the famine of your households and go, but bring your youngest brother to me.'" And of course, who was it that stayed behind? Which brother stayed behind? It had been Simeon. He stayed behind. So they have to tell Jacob all these events as they transpire. They get back home. They relate the entire story to Jacob. He tells them of Joseph's conditions. And how did Jacob take the condition? He's not gone. Now, I told you all, I cannot bear, I lost one son already. I cannot bear to lose this one. So they've got enough grain to last them for however long it'll last them, but you know, if that's going to run out too. They're going to have to go back and get more later. And that takes us to the next chapter when that becomes a reality, and he'll deal with it then. But his answer is right now, no, he's not going. Cannot go. I won't allow it. Reuben, again, as the oldest, he steps in. What does Reuben say? Yeah, if I don't bring Benjamin back, Dad, you can take my two sons and you can kill them. You may put my two sons to death, verse 37. If I do not bring him, speaking of Benjamin, back to you, put him in my care and I will return him to you. But Jacob again emphatically says, my son will not go down with you, for his brother is dead, he alone is left. Now that's interesting. Jacob just doesn't have two sons, he's got 12 sons. But when he says, he alone is left, indicates what feelings of Jacob? For his partial wife that is now dead. He loved Rachel the most. So he had always favored Joseph, and that was the first part of this story with the coat and so forth. And now Joseph, he thinks, is dead. He's been led to believe that. He got mauled by an animal years ago. The brothers cooked up that story and made him believe that. Rachel dies, giving birth to Benjamin. So, you know, he's been protected and sheltered all these years at home. And now the very thing he cherishes the most, the man of the land, is saying, you've got to bring him with you next time you come back. And Jacob says, he's not going. I cannot bear to lose him. Well, I'll tell you, that's the condition. That's the condition. So this thing keeps unfolding. Now, chapter 43. They have to go back to Egypt. They're out of food. What's Jacob tell his sons? Go get some more. What do they say? Well, we'll be happy to do that, but Dad, Father, you know the terms. And that's what the man said. We're going to have to go. We've got to take Benjamin with us. So, look who speaks up now. What part had Judah played in this story as it had been unfolding earlier? Well, he suggested that they sell Joseph. He was in part of the ones who wanted to kill Joseph in the first place, disdained him that much because of their father's favoritism. Joseph says, or rather Judah says basically, well, let's not waste good money here. Let's sell him. We can get something out of him. So he was the ringleader of all that, it seems to be, at the center of that earlier. And now he's saying, look, Father, you Reuben's offered. That didn't go too well earlier. Now Judah's offering. Put him in my care. I'll be surety for him. This is in verses 8 and 9. Send the lad with me. We will arise and go that we may live and not die, as well as you. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then you may let me bear the blame before you forever. I'll be responsible. Hold me liable for what ill may befall me. Yes, sir. Well, Judah, yes, he will be the one of record. You are correct. Well, that's true. As you see the rest of the story play out, yeah, you are correct. But I find it interesting that Judah is now being somewhat honorable, and Judah also will show himself again more honorable just in a few chapters when he's talking with Joseph about Benjamin. And Judah, it seems, has come somewhat full circle from his evil plans of wanting to sell Joseph. It seemed to be his idea back in chapter 37 to sell him. All the brothers listened to him. And now he's trying to protect Benjamin. Where was that for Joseph earlier? It wasn't there, is my point that I'm making. So Jacob relents. He knows they've got to have food. I have no choice here. He says, if I go down to my grave bereaved or down to Sheol with gray hair, then that's what happens. I'll just have to learn to live with it. And so Jacob must relent. Wonder how Jacob felt as he saw Benjamin going off over the horizon. Probably tears in his eyes. I think you're right, Freddie. He was his favorite son at that point. It seems that's the very disposition he had toward his son. Well, they get to Egypt, and I'm skipping several parts there, but we know the story. They get to Egypt. Joseph instructs his house steward, have the men come in, and they'll eat a meal with me. They'll share a meal with me. They'll kill the animal, get the preparations ready. So they come to him. Now, he has not seen Benjamin for a long time. This is now in chapter 43. When Joseph, verse 16, when Joseph saw Benjamin with him, he said to his house steward, here's the instructions about the meal. Verse 26, when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed down to the ground before him again. They were bowing down to Joseph just like the dreams had said. He asked them about their welfare. How is your old father, or is your old father well? Of whom you spoke, is he alive? They said, your servant, your father, is alive and well. Verse 29, he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son. And he said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said what to Benjamin? The last part of verse 29. This is him speaking to his brother now. May God be gracious to you, my son. And what Joseph have to do? I've got to go have myself a good cry. He leaves the room, verse 30. Hurried out, he was deeply stirred. He sought a place to weep, entered his chamber, and wept there. Washed his face, kind of gathered himself together. This was very emotional. He comes back with them, and he says, all right, serve the meal. Now, what does Joseph do about the meal? Puts them in birth order. Now, you're the brothers. What would you think about that, Albert? That's okay. You're the brothers, and Joseph seats you all in birth order. What would you think about that? Man, what's up with that? How did he know that? And what's he do about Benjamin's place? He gives him five times as much. He really heaps the helpings on Benjamin's plate. Now that's got to make them sis so curious. Had to be. They did. How would this man know? Reuben, then Simeon, then Levi, then Judah, and on down the line, all the way to Benjamin. Interesting. But Joseph, he's not toying with him. I don't think that's what he's doing. He's just doing these things to again further test them. Now he has one more test, I believe. He has one more test. So they have the meal. They're getting their grain. What instructions did Joseph give one of his servants? All right, I've got this chalice or this cup. Joseph said he used it for divination purposes. Whether that's true or just a statement, the Bible doesn't say. But you put it in the young man's sack. Return their money again. Fill it with grain. Return their money. Put my cup in the sack and send them on. And they did. And they let the brothers travel on away a little bit, and then he sends his hired help after them. They stop them, and what do they charge them with, basically? Theft. One of you all has stolen my master's cup that he uses to practice divination. Now, this is not good. You know, come down here and you buy our grain, we treat you with kindness, this is how you repay us. This is really how it's going to be played out. Now, what did the brothers know? Well, what were they sure of? Well, we didn't take nobody's cup. You can search our sacks. You can look at all of it, and you won't find it. So they just start opening them up. They get to the last one. And what happens? Well, there it is. Now what do they think? Oh, my. What in the world is happening here? Why is this all happening? This is just normal human behavior we're looking at. Now, Joseph did this, I think, for a reason. He wanted to see what was in their heart. The last time one of Jacob's sons was in jeopardy, and of course, they put him there, they put him in jeopardy. The last time one of Jacob's sons was in jeopardy, how did they act? Treacherously, hatefully, thought little of his life, were willing to kill him, but because they saw no quote, profit in that, we're willing to sell him. All right, let's put Let's put the youngest one in that same jeopardy again. Let's put Benjamin now in trouble. I wonder how they're going to react. I'm convinced that's what's in Joseph's mind. Joseph, the man we've been exposed to in this story is a godly man. And he's put his entire faith and trust in God the whole time. Why would he be acting this way other than just to see how they would treat their younger brother now, whom he had been told earlier, our father won't let him come. But he has relented and let him come now. So let's see how they somewhat protect him. Who speaks up for Benjamin? Judah. I think that's interesting. Judah spoke against Joseph, counseled to sell him earlier, was in league to kill him. Now Judah's heart is so moved with the need to protect Benjamin. Judah comes to him. This is now toward the end of chapter 44, you'll see. Judah, his speech starts in verse 18, and it goes all the way through the end of the chapter, verses 18 through 34. Judah now defends Benjamin. He even offers to take his place. Look, if you've got to keep somebody, Joseph had said, whoever had my cup, he's my slave. The rest of you go back home. You're free to go. I've got the guilty culprit. Well, they won't dare go back home without Benjamin because they had promised their father. We can't do that. Well, he's got the guilty man as far as Joseph's concerned. Judah says, no, look, we cannot even bear the thought of going home. It would crush our father's heart. Take me instead. Now, there's a sacrifice for you. Take me instead. Put me in his place. I'll stay and I'll serve you because I promised my father I would be surety for him. Well, that's all the way through chapter 34. His words, verse 32. He quotes what he said to his father, if I do not bring him back, speaking of Benjamin, to you, to his father, let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my Lord. Let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? Lest I see the evil that would overtake my father. Joseph's convinced now. He hears this. This text is in the chapter 45 now. And we've been going through this whole story. And this is the climax of this great story of providence, chapter 45. I'm also borrowing a statement from chapter 50 as the book concludes. We're going to put these two together. This takes us to question 17 at the bottom of the page. Well, how does Joseph react to this now? He's created this whole situation, all right, with having the Benjamin look guilty. And Judah's now offered to take his place. So what does Joseph do? All right, the first description of Joseph in chapter 45 is what? He could not control himself any longer. He was moved and stirred. So his first order is what? The command he gives is what? Everybody out. Except these men. All right, all the Egyptians, all the house slaves, everybody get out. I won't be left alone with these men. Then what does he say? Next statement. I am Joseph. Is my father well? Isn't that what he asked? Is he well? Is he alive? Is he okay? I am Joseph. This great revelation. What do you think? Judah's offer touched Joseph. What do you think the brothers thought when they heard him say that? Imagine their facial expressions. Somebody's jaw just drops. You cannot. This can't be so. What do you mean? In fact, how does Moses write their description? Into verse 3. They could not answer him. They were greatly dismayed. They were in shock. Had to have been in shock. So, Joseph again says, verse 4. Look, come closer to me. Come take a look. I really am Joseph. He wants to know. He says, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. 22 years it's been. Two of them, Merle and I, were talking Wednesday after class. It's been 20 years. Look at verse 6. How long are we into the famine years? 2 years. It's been 22 years since they threw him in that hole. The person changes in 20 years. And they didn't have any idea what ever happened to Joseph. God took care of him. And he's the very one they've been bowing down to. He's the very one they've been having to deal with in all this. And he says, I am he. Now, Joseph never went on a power trip, did he? This success never went to Joseph's head. How do we know that? Well, by what he says. Look at what he says. After he reveals himself, and that's not really the critical part. But he tells them, look, I am him. I am Joseph. Look what he says. And this, to me, this is the very point of going through this story when you're talking about providence. Joseph understood something that all of us need to understand about providence. Remember the definition I showed you when this story started about providence? Is that God sees the needs of men long before those needs become reality. He can see them. And so through His omniscience, He places people. He puts people through providence, not through miracles, but through providence, the natural course of events. He places people where He can use them so that when those needs become a reality, when the crisis hits, He's got somebody there who's then ready to serve and to do His will. As we said at the start, where did God need Joseph? He knew it all along. He needed Joseph in Egypt. Now, He could have gotten him there any way He wanted. But look at all the things Joseph had to go through to get to where he is now. Some of it was good. He was in charge of Potiphar's house. That's a good thing. He had authority. He's really in charge now. He's in charge of all the land of Egypt, only second only to Pharaoh. But there were some bad things too, weren't there? There was the charge of rape. There was the mistreatment of his brothers. And God is not responsible for any of that. God didn't cause his brothers to hate him. That's just something that they did. That was their choice. God didn't cause Potiphar's wife to desire him sexually and accuse him of rape. That was her choice. But God used all that, the good, the bad, for His will to be accomplished. And now Joseph is where he is. And Joseph's attitude, that's what we need to stress, and that's what I want to end this story with, because that's how we can learn from providence. Joseph says, when talking about the brother's shock, he says, look, do not be angry with yourselves for what? Don't be mad because you sold me into slavery. Now, don't beat yourself up over that. Is Joseph over that? I think he's over it. He's not bitter about it. Now, there's a lesson for us. If you've not had anything bad happen to you, well, you're a lucky person. But I'm telling you, your luck's going to run out. You're going to have some dark and dismal days. Very trying days when your faith is absolutely put all the way to the test. And you can do one of two things. But you can become bitter about that, and you can let those bad situations and bad feelings engulf you and just take you over and make you just such a bitter, hard, crusty person that you'll even blame who? You'll blame God. You can do that. Or you can see those things. That's just the normal course of events of life. As we cited Job on Wednesday night, Job told his wife, we've got to take the good, we've got to take the bad. We've got to take all of them. We can't curse God and die and end it and say that's the end of that. No, we just got to take it and do the best we can and go on. And never give up serving God. Always be faithful. He says to his brothers, verse 5, do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. The famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. We've still got 5 years to go. We're not through this thing yet. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth. Again, why did Jacob's family need preserving? We mentioned this Wednesday. The Messiah promise is that what was at stake. If they perished and wiped out, then where would the Messiah come from? So God had to keep the remnant alive. God had to keep the family alive. So now, therefore, verse 8, it was not you who sent me here, but God. See, Joseph understands that. He knows that now. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over the land of Egypt. So Joseph says, go back, bring my father, and you all live here with me now. Now here's the point we're making. And to me, this must be stressed. when you're studying this story. You meant evil, but God meant it for good. It's been 22 years since they sold him out, but that's all past now. Providence ultimately makes sense when? When will you understand and see providence? On the back end of it. You won't see it when it's happening. And we know that's so. What did Joseph think, do you think, when he was sitting in that prison for 2 years? Woe is me. He didn't know what was going to happen. We've got to trust God in those moments. And only later, when everything works out, then we can look back over our life that's transpired and say, well, all right, now I see why all those things had to happen. I'm thankful for the good things that happened, but I also need to be thankful for the bad things that happened. That's brought me to this point. Bad things can build faith. They build character. They build strength. If you don't give up on God. They do. Now, if you give up on God and blame Him and curse Him, then you won't have happy memories. You'll just have a bunch of scarred memories. And you have a bitter life. And that's not helpful to anybody's faith. God's will is going to get accomplished anyway, with or without our specific human participation. Let me step outside this story and just quickly cite the other great story of Providence, the book of Esther. Remember what Mordecai told Esther when she was in the palace? And he said, look, you've got to go and you've got to talk to the king about these people. We're under the threat of extermination by Haman. And she said, her first answer was what? I can't do that. He's not summoned for me. The king has not extended the scepter and said, queen, you may come in and address me. You don't go into the king unless you've been invited. I can't do that. And Mordecai said, well, I'll tell you what. If you don't, you will perish like everybody else. But God will do what? Somebody else, somewhere, sometime, somehow, Mordecai says, I don't know how, I don't know who, I don't know when. But it'll get done. God's will get done. Whether you choose to step in there and serve or not. We can't thwart God and His purposes. But God creates these situations through His providence and His rule in the affairs of men. And when they come upon each of us, and again, you'll have these moments. If you don't have them, you'll have them. What are you made of? What kind of faith, what kind of character do you have? Yeah, how do you know, Esther, if you don't know that right now is why you are where you are to render this great service? How do you not know that, Esther? Well, she didn't know that, but she couldn't disprove it either. That's just where that was her reality right there. And so with connecting that with this story of Joseph, see, Joseph understands that now. And that's the beautiful thing about this great lesson, is he tells them. So the main lesson of Joseph's story is for us, whether or not we possess the deep faith that he had to see us through the end. That's why we study this great story. Again, our whole theme in this quarter, next quarter, is talking about some very basic, familiar Old Testament stories that build faith and build character. And Joseph is a great one. It's just an awesome, awesome story. And you can have the kind of faith Joseph had, and so can I. And matter of fact, not only can you have it, but you know what? You're going to need it. You're going to need that kind of faith. Because trying times do come to all of us. The devil will see to that. And Joseph shows that. All right, any other comments or questions from anybody about the end of this great story? We've talked a lot about it, I know. Yes. You are correct. If Haman had been successful, they'd have been wiped out there, and where would the seed of promise come from? So she had to render that great service. And Joseph had to render this service, and that's why God needed him where he put him. But what's always impressed me is how God got him there. That's the point to consider. God didn't use a miracle. God didn't just float him right in there, set him right down second in command to Pharaoh. No, he used these chain of events, some pleasant and some very unpleasant. But his will got accomplished. All right. Anybody else? A comment or a question? He is. James, you are right. Nobody can thwart God. God will see that His will comes about. The question is whether we'll step up and play our part. do our role. Okay. I think that's all the charts I had on. At times all we'll have is faith, and so may our words be like Joseph's, just borrowing one verse in chapter 50. We didn't spend a long time in that chapter. But again, this is at the end of the book, at the end of Joseph's life. Jacob, of course, is now dead, and so the sons now have come to him. His brothers said, look, before our father died, this is their request. Verse 16, before our father died, he charged us, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. So they were thinking Joseph's holding out while Jacob's alive. Once he dies, then he'll really, get us. And again, Joseph's character is faith. Look at verse 20. Well, verses 19 and 20. He says, don't be afraid. Am I in God's place? That's not my role. Again, his statement in verse 20. As for you, you meant it evil against me. And sometimes people can be quite wicked and evil, can't they? They can. But God meant it for good. And I understand now why all these dominoes had to fall the way that they did. I see it now. And we want to get to that place where we have Joseph's faith and Joseph's character. Back over our lifetime, we can see how those events played out. Okay. We have just about 3 minutes left, so we can go ahead and introduce the next story. This is page 20. Looking at Exodus chapters 3 through 14, a great story of redemption. This, of course, is the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Obviously, now we've jumped from Joseph's family coming to Egypt. Then Joseph dies, and all those people died, and a new Pharaoh arose. Chapter 1 says that did not know Joseph, nor did not know, or frankly did not care what Joseph had done in saving Egypt years back. So that's where we are now. And eventually they enslaved the Hebrews and put them in bondage. Make them slaves for 400 years. And as has been said before, think about that 400-year bondage. You had some Hebrews who were born, they lived, and they died in bondage, and they never saw the promise that God said about the land promise. They never saw it. Which again just tells us God has His own time schedule. He's not on ours, we're on His. And He does things in His time and in His way. So this is the story of all Bible stories. Not this particular one, but the story of redemption. That's the story of the Bible. Redeeming man from something. Someone is in bondage. Someone must be, or there must be a ransom that is paid. Someone sacrifices to do that. And they're held hostage until someone, because of that sacrifice, ultimately pays the price. Now, obviously, that's true with this story, but what is the greatest redemptive story in the Bible? Christ, that's it. And the same points can be made about what Jesus did for all of us. He paid the price with His own blood. Obviously, the Bible declares that loudly. It's taught both the Old and the New Testament. The greatest story is the one of Jesus Christ. So this story, I believe, when we consider it together, chapters 3 through 14, and we'll start this story on Wednesday night, the Lord willing, it can be seen as a type. All right. A lot of great points will line up in both stories. How they were redeemed from this situation of slavery or bondage versus how Christ redeemed us. He said, he who commits sin is a slave to sin. We're in bondage. We need to be redeemed or rescued or ransomed. So we'll start with question 1, page 20, the Lord willing, on Wednesday night. Thank you for your good comments and participation in class this morning.